All right, let's jump right in, shall we? Today, we're taking a deep dive into a case that really tests the boundaries of free speech in schools. It's Solano v. Sag Harbor Union Free School District Board of Education.
This case, it's a fascinating one, really. It gets cited all the time in legal circles, especially when we're talking about what schools can and can't control when it comes to, well, you know, free speech.
It's like, we all know you can't just shout fire in a crowded theater, right? But what about showing a film clip, say one with nudity, during a high school lecture? Is that allowed? Well, that's exactly what Solano v. Sag Harbor tries to figure out.
And what makes this case even more interesting is the guy at the center of it all, George Solano. This guy, he wasn't just some random guest speaker. He was actually a school board member. And get this, a retired filmmaker, too.
Yeah.
Talk about a tricky situation.
Seriously. It's like he was playing two roles, and those roles, they ended up clashing. Like,
big time.
Big time. So let's get into Solano's lecture. What was he trying to teach? And what was so controversial about this film clip?
Well, Solano, he volunteered to give this presentation on persistence of vision. It's this scientific concept that explains, you know, how our eyes and brains, how they perceive motion in film. And to illustrate this concept, he wanted to use a bunch of film clips, including one called The Birth Scene.
Okay, The Birth Scene. I think I see where this is going. Was this scene like graphic or something?
Well, yeah, it did include some partial nudity, which, as you can imagine, raised some eyebrows, especially in a high school setting, right? But, and this is important, this wasn't just some random shocking footage he threw in there. Solano, he argued that it was meant to illustrate a specific scientific principle all related to this persistence of vision thing.
So he was saying, hey, this is educational, not just for shock value. What did the school have to say about that?
Honestly, they weren't buying it. At first, the principal, he simply told Solano, no, you can't use that birth scene clip. You know, seemed like a pretty reasonable first step to take. But then, and this is where it gets interesting, things escalated. Quickly.
Oh no, what happened?
The superintendent, he ended up banning Solano from the school grounds completely. And on top of that, the school board, they formally censured him, which is, let me tell you, a pretty serious public reprimand.
Wow, they really came down hard on him. All over this one film clip.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why this ended up in court.
Yeah, you're right. This wasn't just a slap on the wrist. This was a full-on legal battle all about the First Amendment. Solano felt his right to free speech, it was violated, and he was ready to fight back.
So how did he go about challenging the school's decision? Did he just march straight into federal court, waving the Constitution around?
Actually, he started by appealing to the New York State Commissioner of Education. And get this, the commissioner, they actually agreed with him, partially at least. They overturned the censure, which was a big win, but they kept the ban from school grounds in place.
So like a half victory. Not enough for Solano, though.
Nope, not at all. He felt like the school, they overstepped their bounds, you know? Like, his First Amendment rights were totally trampled on. So, yeah, he decided to take it to federal court.
Okay, now things are getting serious. So, what was the main legal question the court had to deal with?
The big question, the core of it all, was, did the school violate Solano's First Amendment rights by putting restrictions on what he could talk about in his lecture? Even though, remember, he was a school board member. And to really understand how the court decided, we have to look back at a really important case that set the stage for this whole debate. Hazelwood School District v. Kuhlmeier.
Ah, Hazelwood.
Uh-huh.
That's the one that basically gave schools a lot of control over what students can say, right?
Yeah.
But Solano, he wasn't a student. He was a guest speaker and a board member, too.
You're absolutely right. But the thing is, Hazelwood established this important test, the legitimate pedagogical concerns test. Essentially, it means that if a school can prove they have a solid educational reason for restricting some speech, they're usually given a lot of freedom to do so.
Hmm. So did they use that same test in Solano's case, mm-hmm. even though he wasn't a student? I mean, how did the court weigh his First Amendment rights against, you know, the school's authority to control what happens on their property?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And what's interesting is the court, they broke it down into three key factors. These are the things they looked at when making their decision.
Ooh. I love it when things get organized like that. A three-part legal test. Tell me, what was the first factor?
Well, the first one was all about the context. The court, they pointed out that this wasn't just some public park or street corner, you know, where anyone could say whatever they wanted. This was a school-sponsored activity happening on school property and the audience, high school students.
Okay, that makes sense. Schools have a responsibility to, like, create a certain kind of environment for learning. So mm-hmm. was the court saying just because Solano was on school property, he had to play by their rules, even when it came to his own speech?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. The context, it was just one part of the puzzle. The second factor the court considered was what they call pedagogical justification.
I'm guessing that means the school had to show they had a good reason, a good educational reason, for not allowing that birth scene clip. But how do you prove something wasn't necessary in a lecture?
That's where it gets really tricky. Basically, the court agreed with the school. They said, look, the nudity in that birth scene, yeah, it might be related to persistence of vision in some way, but it wasn't absolutely necessary for Solano to teach the concept. It's like they were saying, hey, there are other ways to get the point across, ways that don't involve potentially inappropriate content for high schoolers.
But even if Solano truly thought that clip was important, the school, they got to decide what was appropriate for their students.
You got it. And that leads us to the third and probably the most important factor, the school's authority.
This is where things get real, right? How much power do schools actually have to control what people say and do on their campuses?
The courts have consistently given schools a lot of leeway when it comes to this kind of thing. They have this duty, you know, to protect their students, both physically and emotionally. And that includes, you know, shielding them from stuff that could be disruptive, distracting, or even harmful.
So even if Solano really truly believed that birth scene clip had educational value, the school's power to decide what's appropriate for their students, that trumps his right to show it.
Exactly. And this isn't just about like old school censorship, you know, it's about recognizing that schools have this special responsibility to be careful about what their students see and hear to make sure it's the right fit for them.
It sounds like with Hazelwood, Solano was facing an uphill battle, legally speaking. But if the school has this much power, where does that leave teachers? You know, teachers who want to use more challenging materials, or even guest speakers who maybe want to push the boundaries a bit.
Yeah, that's a question a lot of people have. And honestly, it's kind of tricky. Solano v. Sag Harbor, it really shows us that tension between, on the one hand, individual rights, and on the other, the responsibility of the school to provide a safe and appropriate learning environment.
So it seems like if you're invited to speak at a school, you might just have to accept that there will be limits on what you can present.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, maybe they don't have total freedom to design their lessons however they want.
You're getting at a really important point. This case doesn't give us all the answers, that's for sure. But it does suggest that schools, they've got a lot of leeway, especially if they can show they have a good reason, educationally speaking, for those restrictions.
Okay, so let's try playing devil's advocate here. Solano, he argued that his film clips, they were basically no different from the books and materials you'd find in a school library. And those are usually protected by the First Amendment, right?
That's true. Libraries, they're often seen as like these protected spaces for free speech where people can explore all sorts of ideas and perspectives. What Solano was saying was, hey, if a student can check out a book from the library that has nudity, why can't I show a similar image in my lecture?
I get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
But the court, they didn't buy it, did they?
Nope, they didn't. And the reason why, it highlights this big difference between libraries and classrooms.
What's the difference? I mean, they're both part of the educational system, right?
It all comes down to choice. In a library, you can browse, you can pick and choose what you want to look at. No one's forcing you to read a specific book or look at a certain picture. But in a classroom, the teacher or best speaker, they're the ones presenting the material. Students are expected to learn from it. It's not optional.
So the court was saying that because the school is making those choices for the students about what they're learning, they have more control over what happens in the classroom.
Exactly. And that's a really big deal. It reinforces this idea that schools have a duty to make sure the educational experience is the right one, that the materials being used are a good fit for the age and maturity level of the students.
This makes me think about how the ruling might affect what teachers put in their lesson plans. Could a school say, you can't teach this book, we don't think it's appropriate, even if the teacher disagrees?
That's a tough one, and Solano v. Sag Harbor doesn't really give us a clear answer, but it does seem to say that in a lot of cases, the school administrators, they get the final say when it comes to the curriculum. They can set the rules, decide which materials are okay and which ones aren't, and make sure everything matches up with the school's goals.
So if a school board, let's say they decided a certain book was too controversial or maybe dealt with themes they weren't comfortable with, could they stop it from being taught?
It's definitely possible. It happens more often than people realize. Of course, it's not like these decisions are made without any thought. There are usually discussions, sometimes pretty heated ones, between teachers, parents, and the school administration about what's right for the classroom.
It sounds like this case really throws a wrench into the whole issue of what teachers can and can't do in their classrooms. Makes you wonder if there are other legal cases out there that could help us understand things better.
Well, there's one case that often comes up when we talk about student free speech rights, and it kind of seems to go against what we've been talking about with Solano. Tinker v. Des Moines. Remember that one?
How can I forget Tinker? Students don't shed their constitutional rights at the schoolhouse gate. It's like the battle cry for students who want to make their voices heard.
You got it. So if students do have this right to free speech at school, how come Tinker didn't protect Solano? He was trying to express himself through his lecture, right?
Yeah, it does seem like a contradiction. Why doesn't Tinker just, like, override everything else?
The key is the type of speech we're talking about. In Tinker, it was about students expressing their own political views, which the court said is protected as long as it doesn't disrupt things at school.
So students wearing armbands to protest a war, that's okay, but showing a controversial film clip isn't. I don't get it.
Solano, that was about school-sponsored expression, and that's treated differently. When a school invites a guest speaker, or when a teacher is giving a lesson, the courts are more willing to let the school have some say in what happens to make sure it fits with their educational goals.
So even though that Tinker quote is powerful, and a lot of people use it, it doesn't mean all types of speech are protected in schools. It depends on the situation.
Precisely. Solano v. Sag Harbor, it reminds us that the line between free speech and a school's power to control things, it can be blurry. And often when there is a conflict, the courts will side with the school.
This whole discussion really makes you think about, like, the power dynamics in our schools. It's not just about the law. It's about who gets to decide what's appropriate for students to learn.
You're absolutely right. And that's why cases like Solano v. Sag Harbor are so important. They force us to think about these complicated issues, you know, censorship, individual rights, and how institutions like schools shape how young people think.
Okay, so we've seen how Solano v. Sag Harbor really kind of muddies the waters when we talk about free speech in schools. It sounds like the courts are saying schools, yeah, they can restrict some types of expression, but how far can they really go with that? Are there any limits?
That's the question, isn't it? Everyone wants to know where that line is. And to understand those limits, you know, we need to look at how Solano v. Sag Harbor has been used in other cases, how it fits in with the whole legal landscape of free speech in schools.
Okay, so let's broaden our horizons a little bit, legally speaking. Are there other big cases that have dealt with this issue?
Well, there's one that always gets mentioned alongside Solano. It's Bethel School District v. Frazier. That one went all the way to the Supreme Court back in 1986.
Oh, yeah, Frazier. That rings a bell. Wasn't that the one with the student giving a speech? A speech with some pretty colorful language.
You got it. Matthew Frazier, a high school student, he gave this speech nominating a friend for student government. And let's just say it was full of suggestive metaphors and innuendos. Not exactly what you'd expect at a school assembly.
I bet the school wasn't thrilled about that.
Not at all. They thought it was disruptive, totally inappropriate for that kind of setting. They ended up suspending Frazier for 3 days.
And what happened then?
The case, it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the court, they actually sided with the school.
Really? So even though Frazier was, like, technically using his right to free speech, the school could still punish him because of what he said.
That's right. In Frazier, the court made this distinction between political speech, the kind that's usually protected under Tinker, and what they called lewd and indecent speech. Mm-hmm. And they said schools have a much stronger reason to regulate that kind of speech.
So it's not just about whether the speech causes problems. It's about whether the school thinks it's morally or socially okay for their environment.
Exactly. Frazier basically said that schools can punish students for speech that goes against their basic educational mission, even if it doesn't cause a huge disruption.
So this seems to back up what we saw in Solano, that schools have a lot of power when it comes to controlling what happens on their property. But what about speech that happens off campus? Can schools punish students for things they post online, even if it's not about school?
Ooh, that opens up a whole other can of worms. Courts are still figuring that out. And it's gotten even more complicated with social media, where it's hard to tell where school ends and personal life begins.
That makes me think of all those stories we've seen about students getting in trouble for what they post on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. Can schools really, like, police what students do online?
It's a gray area, for sure. There's no simple answer. We've seen different courts make different decisions in similar cases. Some courts say it's okay for schools to discipline students for off-campus speech if it causes a big disruption at school or if it threatens the safety of the school community.
So let's say a student posts something threatening about a teacher or another student. Even if they do it at home, the school could still get involved.
Yep, and they usually do. But other courts, they've been more hesitant to give schools that much power online. They say students have more free speech rights when they're not on school grounds or doing school activities.
It all sounds so messy and complicated. Is there any clear guidance for schools and students, you know, like how to handle these situations?
Sadly, no. It's still a work in progress, legally speaking, and each case is different. It depends on the specifics. But one thing that seems to be consistent is this. Schools have a responsibility to provide a safe and orderly learning environment.
So it's like this constant balancing act, you know?
Yeah.
Protecting students' right to speak their minds and making sure the school can do its job, provide a good learning experience for everyone.
You hit the nail on the head. It's a balancing act, and it's not easy, especially now with technology constantly changing how we communicate.
Wow, we've covered a lot of legal ground today, from Solano v. Sag Harbor to Frazier, Tinker, even dipping our toes into the murky waters of off-campus speech and social media.
We've given everyone a crash course in free speech law in schools. It's a complicated subject, that's for sure.
This whole deep dive, it really shows that there are no easy answers. That line between what you can say and what can get you in trouble, it can be really blurry, especially in schools.
Absolutely. And as technology keeps changing, these issues are only going to get more challenging and more important to talk about.
So what's the big takeaway here? What do students, teachers, schools, what do they all need to remember as they navigate this constantly changing legal world?
I think the most important thing is this. Free speech is a huge deal, a fundamental right, but it's not unlimited, especially in schools. Schools, they have to maintain order, keep their students safe, make sure learning can happen without constant disruptions.
So it's about finding that balance, right?
Mm.
Between letting people express themselves and taking care of the whole school community.
You got it. It's all about balance, and that balance, well, it's something people will always be discussing and debating. But if we understand the legal stuff, have thoughtful conversations, and consider each situation carefully, then we can try to create learning environments that support both free speech and what's best for the students.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about as they continue to explore the fascinating world of free speech law. It's always changing, that's for sure.
It's been a pleasure talking about this with you. As always, the more we learn about these legal issues, the better prepared we are to deal with the world around us.
Couldn't agree more. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and keep those legal minds sharp.